My glasses. And then my glasses.
Oh, glasses? All right. Okay.
Glasses. My eyes getting worse. Worse and worse.
Yeah, well, I'm never sure which glasses to wear, because these are better for the computer, but these are better for reading from a book. So probably better stick with the reading glasses, because that homunculus in this chapter, in the English version, his dialogue is so tiny and in a difficult to read font also. So even with my glasses, I struggle.
Doesn't matter, because all he says is mendokse.
Yeah, too much effort. I'm too
pain in the butt.
Working. Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever translated mendokusai as too much effort. I usually translate it as pain in the butt or pain in the neck,
yeah,
depending on the audience.
Yeah, or a hassle.
Yeah.
Yes, everything is a pain to him.
Yeah. A big old pain.
The Law of Equivalent Exchange. This is Tim in Tokyo reading Fullmetal Alchemist in English from Viz.
And this is Patrick in Kumamoto reading Hagane no Renkin Jutsushi, the original in Japanese, from Hiromu Arakawa from Gangan Comics.
Right. And this time we have a guest. You've heard us talk about her many times. It's Memory Echo in Portugal. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you for the invitation.
Sure, yeah.
Oh, no, we're happy to have you.
We've wanted to have more guests. We had a couple back in the early days, and then we've just been kind of floundering, trying to figure out who would be good to have on, and thought, well, our most vocal fan, let's have her on. We hear from her on Twitter every time we put an episode out, so.
Yeah.
I'm a little nervous, because now... I can ask somebody, what do you think about all, what do you think about all my like, you know, not transgressions.
I like your tangents. I like your tangents, Patrick.
Awesome. Good to know. See, Tim, I told you.
Okay.
I find them very funny.
No, it's true. Tim has actually never asked me to stop doing that. But
no, I never have. I'm just sometimes I kind of just wait through them. But so, Memory Echo, do we look like we sound? We've got video on here.
Yeah, I had no idea what you looked like. So
right.
Yeah, I guess you look fine.
But you know, when I listen to podcasts and I don't know what the people sound like, and I kind of start to visualize them, usually kind of based on other people who I do know. And then I see them like they look nothing like what I thought they looked like.
case in point, Casey Kasem. Do you know who that is? Casey Kasem was like a top 40 DJ, had this really cool voice. And he also voiced some of my favorite characters, including anime character. Gotcha Man. He was like the leader of the team, but he was also what's the guy from Scooby-Doo, the hippie. He was also Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, which completely different. But like when I finally saw him in person, I was so disappointed because he's a little guy.
Yeah, I can't even remember how I visualized him before I saw him, but yeah, of course he looked different from what I thought. So, are there a lot of manga readers in Portugal?
There might be. It's just that manga in Portugal is difficult because the market is so small. Most books are never translated to Portuguese, like Full Metal Alchemist.
Yeah.
Not even Dragon Ball is translated,
wow.
I think.
So, you can go to a bookstore and get an English one or from Amazon or...
Yes, there are Portuguese websites that sell manga, but it's all in English.
Or do you
French,
ever...
or any other language, but not in Portuguese.
So, have you ever read a Brazilian Portuguese edition?
From here? Nope. No, I never have.
Hmm. Or could you read it in Spanish? I know it's kind of close to Portuguese.
I could read it. I understand a little bit of Spanish, but I prefer the English editions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, from what I know, I've seen a lot of like some of the French translated editions, and sometimes I get the impression that they are not translating from the original Japanese, but translating from the English editions. Sometimes I get that impression. I haven't actually done hard research on it, but you know, sometimes it looks. I think like similar sound effects, this kind of, you know, this kind of thing just gives me the sneaking suspicion that they're translating from the English.
Could be. I've never seen a French edition, so I can't tell you.
Especially like Southeast Asian editions, because it looks like they're using the same font for the English, like the font for the sound effects as the English ones. That's what kind of gave me that impression.
Oh, I did want to ask you also, how did you happen to find Fullmetal Alchemist? How did you happen to start reading it?
Well, that's funny, because I was actually watching a YouTube video about the philosophy of Dragon Ball. And the next video on the playlist happened to be by the same authors, The Philosophy of Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood.
Okay.
So I happened to watch that video, and from then I went to the manga.
Ah, I see. Okay.
So you didn't go to the anime first, you went to the manga first.
No, I watched the anime first, yes.
Okay.
And then I read the manga.
I love videos like that. I like people who do like the really deep philosophical takes, or like sometimes they apply psychology or, you know, some cultural theory thing. And that's kind of my thing. So, yeah, I love those videos like that. In my case, like the first time I read Fullmetal Alchemist was I bought the first issue of the monthly Gangan that I saw on the cover. Whoa. I was like, what is this? But I'm so like ADD. I would not remember. That's my dog coming in into the room without the permission. She knows how to open the door. And so she just comes on in. Whole house is hers, I guess. I saw the art, and I saw this big armor thing and this guy with like a cyborg arm, and I was like, oh, this is going to be cool. And I read the first chapter and I thought, wow, I'm so intrigued. And then I would just forget to buy the issues, and which has happened to me my whole life. Like I've never been able to like continue a series until I found a dedicated comic book store that like I was there every week. So I didn't miss issues then. But like after coming to Japan, I cannot read like Jump or Magazine. I can't read these weekly things because I'll forget and I'll miss chapters and I'll get demotivated. So I'm a wait for the book guy. So, and that's what happened. And then when finally like the series ended, and I'm like, I'm going to read these. And I bought the whole thing like from a used bookstore, like from a rental comic shop. I bought the whole set. And I said, I'm going to read these. And I started in again. And I just lost track. And then my wife read my set. And she goes, I'm almost mad at you for not reading it. She says, it is so good. I'm just so mad at you right now. Like, you need to read this so we can talk about it. And I was like, okay. And then I started reading and I was like, oh God, this is so good. But it's long enough ago. And I talk about this on the podcast. You probably heard me say this before. Yes. I cannot remember a darn thing. Like, I know that I loved it. And whenever we come back through stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, I really like this stuff. But it's my mutant power. As soon as I read a mystery, I forget who the killer is. As soon as like the last page, I close the book and already forgotten. And I'm like, what? What did I just read? I don't even remember.
I enjoyed it, but I can't remember anything about it. I guess I'll start reading it again.
So Tim, now it's your turn. How did you come across?
Okay. Well, so I can't remember if I've talked about this on the show before or not. If I did, it was like in episode one. So I used to work on an American military base here in Japan, I was working for a university that contracts with the military overseas. And so I was doing Deconstructing Comics podcast, which I'm still doing. And so I noticed in the library on the base, they had all kinds of different manga. And so I was reading a lot of it, and several of the series ended up getting talked about on Deconstructing Comics, like Nanma and Death Note. And I read a couple dozen One Piece volumes, and then I just got tired of it and gave up. I read a few volumes of Bleach, and I thought, like, the first two were great, and then after that, it really went off the tracks. And Fullmetal Alchemist, so it was not done yet in Japanese. I think the library, I was trying to remember, I think they had the first 19 volumes. And so I read all those, and we did a Deconstructing Comics episode on just that much of the series. The library, I kept checking, and they never got further volumes, so I just started buying them from that point. And then later, I went back and bought all the other ones. Kind of related to that, I was noticing, so we're starting volume 17 this time, and from volume 17 on, I have first printings in English. This one was printed in October 2008, or that's the date of the first printing. I don't know, probably kept running beyond that, but it was
October 2008, only a year behind. Because I have a first printing, it's September 2007.
Okay. So in that year, they translated it and put it together. So yeah, I owned the later volumes before I owned the earlier ones. All right, well, let's get started on the chapter. This is chapter 66, The Snow Queen. So
we got to start with the cover.
All right. Well, I guess this is the Snow Queen on the cover, right? Olivier Armstrong.
Yep. And, you know, a lot of Arakawa's women look very similar, but, you know, luckily she always has the same, like, kind of upset look on her face. So she's easy to tell apart.
Yeah. And we got Buccaneer and what's the other guy's name? Miles. Yeah.
Now in this, his skin color looks exactly the same.
Yeah. You know, coloring. Yeah. Supposedly he has darker skin, but not here.
What another thing? Like when you open the cover, and then you have the picture.
Oh, it's in color.
Yeah.
In the nice. Japanese edition, yeah. When I tried to break the old blade off, I broke the whole utility blade. Hiromu Arakawa, 2007.
Yeah, so, you know, these cutter knives, you know, you can snap off the end, right?
But yeah, got ended one up right
snapping
here.
the whole thing. But I noticed this with every manga series. I think I mentioned it just two episodes ago. I don't know if it's been aired yet, but I was talking about how, like, at the beginning of a series, they write a whole bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm so grateful. Yes. And if you can't even think. And then by the time you get to, like, volume 10, it's like a sentence. Like, often, like, not even a full sentence. Like, Shizuoka, the weather's nice or something. Yeah. You know, like, just.
Here's another book.
Buy it. Pay for my new car. Come on.
So, this chapter starts out with Yoki. And where, you know, he had jumped off the train in the previous chapter, and so he's kind of lying in some wreckage beside the tracks, saying, "I've had it. I'm sick of this life." And he's cursing out Scar, and then Scar appears and grabs his leg, and he says, "Ah, forgive me." And Scar says, "We got to take off. We got to get out of here." And Yoki's like, "Why should I follow you? I'm sick of this. I want to go home." And Scar is like, "Well, they're going to be looking for me. And if they and Kimblee will remember you because he has a good memory. So if they find you, they're not going to be nice to you." And then he says, "Of course, if you're lucky, they'll just shoot you on the spot." I think that's the first time Scar is at a comedy line. I mean, it's only funny because of the context, but it's kind of sarcastic.
I mean, you know, it's kind of what we see here a little bit is Scar is actually looking out for Yoki, you know? I mean, he doesn't, does he have any, like, I'm sure he has some use for him still, but basically it seems like, you know, he's, okay, you can go if you want, but you're going to get shot in the face, you know, if that's what you want. It's kind of.
Yoki did so many things wrong. I mean, the army knows it, but Scar doesn't know. He doesn't know what he did in the mining town way back in chapter 3, I think.
Yeah, so. Yeah, volume 1.
Little did we know, that Yoki would still be with us here in chapter 7, in book 17.
He's fallen so far. Meanwhile, at Briggs, Miles and Buccaneer are talking with Olivier Armstrong. And they're telling her that Kimblee, she's asking, Solf J. Kimblee? That's the scene opening. So because of his injuries, which we know were caused by Scar, he checked into a hospital at the base of the mountain. So he's going to be coming to the base, and Central Command says we have to help him however we can. She knows who Kimblee is, the Red Lotus Alchemist, but she was thinking he was in prison. So she asked, did he escape? And no, he was officially released, apparently. And she says, I don't like it.
I bet you there's nobody visiting Kimblee with gifts and stuff.
I wonder.
I bet you he's not a real popular guy.
No. So then the alarm goes off, and the sound of the alarm in English is woo, W-U-U-U-U-U.
That's close enough. It's just ooh.
Okay. And, of course, the reason is, as we saw at the end of the previous chapter, this homunculus has come up from under the ground in the basement level of the base.
Yep, big old Ed McGinnis-looking guy.
And we never do find out this guy's name in this chapter.
I mean, it's got to be one of the seven sins, right? What's left?
Right, yeah. We had lust, envy.
Do we have sloth? Oh, sloth. It's got to be sloth.
It has to be sloth.
Everything's a pain in the butt, right?
Right, yeah. All through the chapter, all he's saying is it's too much work. It's not worth the effort. It has to be sloth.
He's so lazy, he waited this long to show up in the story. That's how lazy he is.
And, of course, Ed and Al realize that he's a homunculus because he's got the Ouroboros tattoo. And so they're talking with him, and they think that he showed up looking for them. Ed thinks, damn it, so they already know that we came here to find a way to fight the homunculi. But he has no idea who they are. He's not there for any particular reason. He just kind of happened to.
Well, we don't know.
Apparently,
I mean, obviously, he was told to do it because he doesn't want to do it, but he's doing it because old father is probably a really scary dude. So I guess we can just it's just conjecture until we find out, but. Yeah.
He's too lazy to think for himself, maybe.
Yeah.
It's possible.
So he does what he's told because he's too lazy to come up with his own ideas or his own wants.
I do know people like that.
So since Ed and Al are talking to him, then the military people think that they're friends with him, and then they start accusing them of being spies again from Drachma. There's so much suspicion of Drachma, and I don't think Drachma ever does anything in the series.
What's hilarious is that Ed basically kind of gives him all kinds of motivation to now be interested in him because he's just assuming that that's what he's there for. You're here to beat me up because I killed your sister, right? You did what to my sister? shut up, Ed.
But they're very shoot first, ask later people over there in Briggs, aren't they?
Yeah, literally. Yeah, on this page, Buccaneer takes a shot at Ed. So you're Drachma's spies after all? I mean, they don't even have any proof that Sloth has anything to do with Drachma. They're just kind of what they're focused on. Well, it's the expression, if you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
So. Yeah, good. That's a good metaphor.
Did you notice Spellman on that page is just slinking in the corner thinking, I'll just pretend I don't know them.
Yeah.
He's probably still upset at the comment about his career in the previous chapter.
I'm, as you might guess, in public, I can be a very noticeable, loud person. Mm. And so sometimes when I'm with my shyer friends and they start to pull this on me, like, I'm just walking at the same speed as this guy. I'm not with him. I'll go and put my arm around him. I'll go and put my arm around him and say, hey, Taka, what do you think? No one escapes. No one is free.
So are they wearing a shirt that says, I'm not with stupid? Or? The alarm is ringing. Sloth is walking around in the base. They're shooting at him. Of course, it has no effect.
What's the sound effect for this with Ed jumping away from the shots?
Just blam. Just a pretty garden variety English sound effect.
That is pretty garden variety. It's because this is one I don't hear much in Japanese. It's dochun, which is not a typical gun sound effect. So it's kind of interesting one.
Hmm. The next page, we got some better ones. When Sloth throws that big pipe, the sound is shoop, and then it lands katong.
It's also an original one here in Japanese. It's dozun. with lots of little oohs in there.
There's not that much that happens in this chapter plot-wise. It's mostly just dealing with Sloth. They're shooting at him ineffectually. They're kind of trying to chase him out. So, like, really big guns have a little bit of an effect on him. But he says it's too much effort to feel pain.
Yeah, I wish I could say that. That's awesome. I mean, it only affects him to the point that it's just moving him, like, you know, a few inches away. It's not really doing any damage to him.
Yeah, I mean, of course, as I was thinking about this and reading it again, it's like he hasn't really, other than breaking through the floor, he hasn't really done anything. They're just so. Assuming that because he showed up there, it means he's spying or doing something against them, that he's attacking them. But he doesn't, once he gets into the base, he doesn't really do anything you'd call an attack.
Okay, but Tim, you worked on a base. And do you remember all the things you had to go through to get on the base from the outside? You have to go through the checkpoint and all that stuff. If you suddenly burrowed in from a hole in the ground,
right,
I think they would be a little bit suspicious of you.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Just the fact of your being there is crime enough.
Yeah, but the fact that they're wanting to just destroy him without asking him any questions is, you know, I think this is a if he was less indestructible, there'd probably be more. Because, you know, they can throw everything at him simply because he can take it, you know, otherwise, and then the story would end, you know, like he would, like, he's dead. All right. What was that about? Don't know, because he's dead.
I mean, I was just thinking of it's kind of a double negative. You could say more destructible rather than less indestructible.
I don't know. I think I stand by my double negative.
So they finally have to resort to tanks, like several tanks just even shooting at him from the tank turrets doesn't have that much effect, and they have to push him out with the tanks.
Oh, at least they did some damage with the tanks, you know, like have you ever been punched right here between the eyes and like on the bridge of the nose? If you've ever been punched there, the first thing that happens is your eyes tear up immediately, you know, And your face, your nose feels the pain before you do. And it just like your eyes just go tears and you can't see anything. Mm. And basically the fight's over because you're like, I can't see. it's not a good feeling. Let me just say that. And so it's a pretty like sweet spot that where they got him. And but basically all it did was tear a bit of skin off his cheek. Yeah. As it slid away, I guess.
Right.
That's how non-destructible. That's how lacking he is in destructibleness.
Okay. So, but it does give Ed a chance to prove that he's not a spy, because when Sloth throws a big piece of machinery that's headed straight for one of the other soldiers. Ed conjures up a big kind of hand-shaped stone from the floor that blocks the machinery flying through the air. And yeah, later on, Buccaneer says, because you just saved my comrade's life without a moment's hesitation. That's enough for me. So he changed his mind about them being traitors or spies or whatever.
I think it's so quick. He didn't really think about what he was making. I think that's why it takes the shape of a hand, because it's, you know, that's your reflex, right? Is to block with your hand. And what this suddenly reminded me of was Green Lantern.
Ooh.
Because Green Lantern, like he projects things from his ring, but it's, you know, they're not always like function. They're also like they're shaped like things that they don't need to be shaped by, shaped in, you know, like he just like a giant locomotive pushes them off, and so it's kind of, he didn't have to be a hand, but I think because it was like really, you know, quick spur of the moment thing, that's what,
that makes sense,
you know, projected.
That's his go-to.
That's right.
Go-to technique.
That's right. Talk to the hand. That's what it is.
Remember, Echo, do you ever read like American comics?
I haven't read any lately. No? I used to read Spider-Man.
Ah, okay. Okay. Was that in English or in Portuguese?
It was in English also.
Okay. So basically nothing is published in Portuguese unless it's originally written in Portuguese, huh?
There might be, but I can't find it anywhere.
So even Portuguese comics are in English?
No, but I don't know any Portuguese comics, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything that's made in Portuguese. I'm sure there are some, but I don't know about it.
By the way, how did you come up with the handle Memory Echo?
Oh, Memory Echo is my username for one of the forums about Roswell. It was an old TV show in 1999 about aliens.
I saw your tweet, your Roswell tweet, and I was like, I watched that show religiously, actually.
Really?
Back in the day. I mean, again, you're dealing with a memory that doesn't leave any echoes here, so it's like, I have to be reminded of stuff, but like, I liked that show
quite a bit. Yeah. You remember watching it, you don't remember anything about it, I assume.
My memory's a lot more clear when it comes to the X-Files, because I rewatched it several times.
Okay. So, but Roswell, something about aliens, and that's about it.
Well, I remember who the aliens were, so
okay.
I've got that going.
That's
for
a start.
Me.
Well, I mean, I think I still remember one or two things about what's happening in Full Metal after this, but we'll see, because I've been wrong before about things I thought I remembered.
I know, we dedicated like half an episode to conjecture, which was completely wrong.
Yeah, and I just had another experience like that too, because I think I mentioned before I was watching Dallas, and got to the end and watched the two movies that came out later, TV movies from, I think, what, 1996 and 98. I was sure I'd seen the 96 movie because I remember my parents sending me a tape of it. And I remembered something happening in it. Well, I remembered that JR fakes his death, but What?
Spoiler alert!
I completely. Well, it's not really a spoiler. It's pretty obvious from the show, but how it happens is completely different from how I remembered it. I must have dreamed it or something because it was so far off.
Well, this is what's happened to me in the past. Like before the Terminator 2 movie came out, the novelization came out first. They don't do that anymore.
Mm.
You know, they're very careful not to do that anymore. I read the novelization, zipped right through it. And so when I saw the movie, all the missing scenes that were cut out of the movie were in my head. So I felt like I saw the whole fully uncut movie, which they later released. You know, they put those scenes back in. So that I always get the best version. So like if I read a comic strip and then there's the comic book version and then there's a TV version, the movie version, I will combine them into one image of what that character is. And I always have the best image in my, you know, what we call headcanon, right? Mm-hmm. It's but I've only experienced this in the manga version, so I don't have anything else to add to it.
Oh, I have Brotherhood in my mind so much that
can you tell us
sometimes it's difficult to tell them apart.
What's the difference between the first series that came out and then Brotherhood, which came out later?
The first series came out in 2003. And it was so early on in the manga that they didn't have a lot of material to adapt. So very early on, they just diverged into their own path. And so it only covers a few volumes of the manga.
Hmm.
And it doesn't follow it that closely either. They just went on their own path.
So if I were to watch
Brotherhood.
So the further adventures of Ed and Al.
So if I were to watch that, I'd it'd almost be like I get some more original content about these guys.
Yes.
Written by Hiro Murakawa.
Alternative history.
Alternative canon.
But then Brotherhood is pretty much the same as the manga?
Pretty much. It changes a few scenes and a few things that, frankly, I don't understand why they make the changes. There's one particular scene where, I don't remember the chapter, but it's when Winry finds out about Hughes.
Hmm.
She goes to his house and cooks a pie, an apple pie. Remember?
Uh-huh, okay.
In the manga, she cooks an apple pie.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ed tastes the apple pie kind of just to humor her. She was crying.
Mm-hmm.
And in Brotherhood, the pie is not there, and all she has is a basket full of apples, which is ridiculous. Why make the change? There's nothing for Ed to do to comfort her in his own way, and there's just a bag of a basket of apples.
Yeah, that seems like that sounds like.
Changes, like, it makes no sense.
Well, that sounds like when somebody says, well, and what happens next? You know, she makes an apple pie. It's like, apples? Okay. Just like, I'm not checking. Just tell me what happens. Okay, apples. All right.
Something about apples. Yeah. Have you seen, I have not, in any of the live action Full Metal Alchemist?
No. The reviews told me it was so bad that I didn't really risk it.
Ever since I think the Devilman, not the Devilman Crybaby, but the Devilman live action movie that was made in the 90s, like ever since that, I've pretty much like relegated all live action stuff. I'd like just from the get go, I'm going to assume it's going to be crap. And, and that makes it easier, you know, I'll still find some good things about it here and there, but my favorite kind of thing is to watch a movie that I really like and then discover later, oh, it's based on a comic, and then, you know, and then read the comic. But usually if I read the comic first, I'm probably going to be disappointed. However, like, I read a lot of stuff from the 70s and like late 60s, early 70s. And a lot of that stuff was, especially the stuff made for like college age guys is there's not a lot of depth, you know. It's like, here's some more boobs, you know. You know, it's just, it's, you know, I mean, there's some really good things in the comics, but it's just, there's not, you know. But then a director who has kind of his own sense will do some really cool stuff with those ideas. And so, you know, I think some of the greatest, like what they call pinky violence movies are based on these late 60s, early 70s comics that, you know, are okay. I think, you know, they did elevate the material somewhat. It's possible.
At To the Batpoles podcast, we look at the many sides of our favorite hero, Batman. For example, Encyclopedia Batman.
It's the basic formula for escaping from the Siamese human knot. I just recalled it.
Civic Responsibility Batman.
Only a criminal would disguise himself as a licensed bonded guard, yet callously park in front of a fire hydrant.
Impish Humor Batman.
Look at him, Robin. That crooked bird's going crazy.
And more. See if you can identify other sides of the Caped Crusader, and then join us at To the Batpoles podcast, available wherever podcasts are found or at tothebatpoles.libsyn.com. Batman has many sides, but can we trust him to save the day?
You can be sure, if it's Batman.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure how much more there is to say about this chapter, but I mean, they manage to push him outdoors, and they dump this fuel on him, which is for use in cold weather, and it evaporated and robbed him of his body warmth. And so they just leave him outside in the blizzard to sort of hibernate until spring.
I thought it was a good move, just because when you hear her ask for the fuel, you think, okay, here we go. They're just going to try to burn him up.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the ending of every other big bad monster movie. When they don't know how to kill it, they'll either burn it, or what do? Freeze it, like the Blob or Terminator 2. But I did not expect them to freeze it, so I was actually happily surprised.
I always have this question: is ice really worse than fire? I don't know. I always imagine fire to be worse than freezing.
All I can say is I read this story in elementary school. It was like a Jack London story about this guy escaping, and he's lost in the tundra or something. And he is so cold that he sees the steam rising off the water. He cannot stop himself from getting in the water and like freezing to death quicker. he's like, it's warm for like a second, and then it just like, oh, that was bad. And it just like, I don't know, it traumatized me. I'm not sure. Like, I already had a fear of fire from like Dumbo, Disney, you know, that was that was bad enough. But then now I got the new trauma of fear of freezing to death. So I can't tell you which one's worse. But like when your fingers are like your extremities are start to freeze, I mean, it does feel like they're burning actually.
Oh, okay.
We should mention Fallman shoots at, not at Sloth, but at icicles above Sloth, and icicle lands on Sloth's head and kind of doesn't really knock him out, but it makes him, it kind of distracts him so that Ed and Al can kick him off the balcony into the snow. And so they slight Fallman again. Nice work, Warrant Officer Fallman. He says, I'm a second lieutenant.
Yeah, but that's good teamwork. That's good teamwork there. They recognize that opportunity.
Something so simple could be so effective.
Well, I'm glad that Fulman gets to, you know, he gets to show his worth a little bit here, you know, because he's...
Yeah.
So after they've pushed Sloth out, so Armstrong has Ed, Al, and Fulman kind of tied up around the chest, and she says she's not going to release them until she figures out what that big monster is. And yeah, we skipped the part. So she was asking Ed and Al what they knew about this creature. And because they're trying not to bring up like the real reason they're there, or the military being corrupt, or the homunculi, or any of that, they couldn't tell her. And so she's not completely sure she can trust them, because they clearly know more than they're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, and you know, they're there in front of everybody, and they don't know how deeply they can trust her. So yeah. Keeping things mum.
Also, another kind of comedy moment. She's saying this is the first time in about almost 20 years that anyone breached their base. And the last time was an unknown female who stole food and equipment for a whole month. But then all of a sudden, the attack stopped. She was believed to be one of Drachma's spies. But Ed and Al realized that was Izumi. They were saying in the previous chapter that she had bragged that she survived in Mount Briggs for a month during winter.
They don't even call her like, oh, that person. Like, I don't know how it's translated, but in Japanese it's just that. Yeah, it's that. Is it that? English, it's that.
It was her.
Yeah.
And we got a picture of her in the background there holding a knife.
Yeah, it was just that, because she's a force, you know. She's a living force.
And so then they're looking at the hole, and there's some like mining cars and track there, like it's the Seven Dwarfs diamond mine. And they're wondering how far that hole goes. Yeah, no dwarves, no hi-ho, no diamonds either.
And I don't remember anything about Sloth. I don't remember this hole. I'm just like, what's gonna happen next? I'm totally, you know, like, what's this hole about? And I did flip to see the first page, the next, but I, you know, just because I couldn't hold it in.
And so on the last page, there are a couple of military guys all bundled up outdoors, continuing to dump that fuel on Sloth, so that he'll stay frozen. But yeah, what's happening here at the end? There's ba-dum, too much that he's saying.
So he's still somewhat conscious.
Yeah.
Just can't move. I almost didn't catch that.
He's frozen, but he's still alive.
Yeah, I almost didn't catch that.
Yeah, I didn't notice it until just now.
I think that ba-dum is his huge heartbeat or something.
Yeah, maybe. And then there's ooh, which is the wind, I assume.
Yeah.
So, Memory Echo, did you have a favorite sound effect in this chapter?
Yes.
What was it?
It's when Sloth, it's the katong sound. I really like that.
Ah, okay.
When Sloth throws the huge thing at the Elrics.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a pipe? I don't even know that.
Yeah, it's like a big pipe.
A big pipe. Yeah. Mine was 6 pages later when he's hit in the head with the kind of whatever that is. I can't think of the right word. It's like a huge bullet.
Shell.
Shell. Okay. The sound is batunk.
Well, that sound in Japanese is megyo, which is completely original, but it has like a meki sound, which is almost like the ripping of metal kind of sound, which is a you know, interesting sound. I have to go with a hard one, because I wasn't sure if I liked the pipe landing, the dozun, or if I liked Ed dodging the bullets with the dochun. So it was a tune or a zoon for me. I think I'm going to go with dochun, because I've never heard that sound effect before. I think it's like, it's got a really, it's the do is always like a low hard sound, but then the chu is like a kind of a high. So I think, you know, it's like the firing and then the hitting of the bullets in the ground. It's like that kind of double sound. So that's what I'm going with, do chun.
Okay. Honorable mention, a couple pages later, when he's hit with another shell in the stomach, it's zunk, Z-U-U-N-K. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I like zinc. Wait, let me see what it is in Japanese, because I'm curious. Oh, there it is. It's Zudong, which is pretty normal.
Mm-hmm.
Like typical Japanese.
Okay, it starts with the zu sound. So there's some similarity to the English.
Mm.
So, Memory Echo, I imagine this is a little fresher in your mind. Do you remember what happens after this? Don't tell us, but...
Yes, I remember. But don't worry, no spoilers.
Okay. Hmm.
She doesn't have the word memory in her handle for nothing.
What's the thing that attracts you most to Fullmetal Alchemist? What do you like the most about it?
Oof, so many things.
Yeah.
It's the whole roller coaster ride of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
It's really profound. There's someone doing a series of videos on YouTube about the actual alchemy.
Mm.
That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I was watching those. Please share those because I'm totally interested in that kind of stuff. I have a whole book of alchemy over here. I've got...
Arakawa has really done her homework. Done a lot of research for this, apparently. And it really shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to think how I would answer my own question. I mean... Yeah, the range of emotions, you're right. I mean, the almost every chapter outside of those war flashback chapters, there's this mixture of comedy and action and philosophy and all these different things. I think what my answer though would be just how well thought out it is.
Yes.
You know, there's not really a point where you're thinking, oh, geez, it's going off in this direction. It's just all the way through. You know, it's not Bleach. It's and it's not One Piece.
Inuyasha. Yeah.
Well, Inuyasha just spun its wheels for 10 or 15 volumes before it finally ended.
Yeah.
They had that great bit with the last Kikyo story, I thought was really well done and really moving. And then after that, it was just really a slog. I'm like, why is this still going on? Just end it. Anyway. Okay. Patrick, what's your answer to that question?
Well, one is, like you said, like it's something that my wife mentioned that I... Totally. When I finished reading it, I was like, you are right again. which is, it's really well put together. Like all the pieces fit together so nicely and just so well planned. The reason that I picked up that first issue of Monthly Gangan without knowing who Arakawa is or without knowing anything about it, any hype or anything, was I loved the style. I loved the art style. Mm-hmm. I thought the characters were very appealing, and I liked the kind of androgynous look of Ed, and then this very cool armor, which doesn't really, it fits kind of the Japanese angle of like high fantasy armor, but it doesn't actually match any actual armor that exists, and I liked that look, and the fact that it was alchemy, and there was like this alchemical symbol and this kind of thing. So I knew it was going to have some creepy stuff in there, and I like the creepy. So,
Well, I think I've said this before on the show, but just, the choice of having Al be that suit of armor makes the whole thing so visually distinctive. And you see that picture of Ed and Al, and you know what comic it is. It really gives it a calling card that just having two blonde boys on the cover wouldn't.
And even if
it's
like
recognizable in silhouette. You could just see the silhouette, you know immediately that it's Fullmetal Alchemist.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's also like one thing that they really professional editors will get onto manga artists about their character designs. Like, can you recognize if I slap the silhouette on a cup, are you going to know? Are you going to know who it is? And some of the problem that I have with a lot of recent anime is that I can't tell the characters apart because, girl with light blue hair, check. Girl with pink hair, check. Girl with green hair, check. You know, it's like dude with dark green hair, check. It's like I the guys are usually easier to tell apart for some reason. Hmm. But you know, you really have to get into it.
But silhouettes, they all look like the same boy and the same girl, huh?
Oh yeah, just like the same like pick hairstyle from row A, and then you know, so that's why now I know why like they really get into like trying to make original eye shapes, you know, like the way that the eyes are shadowed, because they have to somehow differentiate without being too different. It's, you know, it's the animators that grew up on animation, like this is the result. When like the old stuff, I sound so old when I'm like, you know, the old stuff was so good.
Back in my day.
And but it's true that they had a wider range of influences. You know, it's just the fact. You know, like I have my first class of manga history for this year in just 2 days, and my very first lesson is about the stuff that Tezuka looked at before. You know, we even talk about anything he drew. Mm. We talk about his Eastern. His Western influences, and then the next week we talk about the Eastern influences, and it's not just Disney; it's actually pretty wide, and reaches back pretty far. So he synthesized all of that to make this style, which was copied ad infinitum. You know,
yeah, it kind of became the pattern for a lot of manga. Yeah,
the pattern, yeah. In fact, a lot of other styles that were very much alive and popular at the same time, they slowly got smooshed down because everybody, you know, they were like, "Oh, Tezuka started all this." No, he didn't. But he, you know, he synthesized a lot of interesting stuff and made it kind of his own thing. But obviously, and with Full Metal Alchemist, and with a lot of they do lots of research into outside topics and stuff, and that's, you know, when it's informed by that kind of stuff, it's pretty cool. Has anybody here tried any alchemy?
No, I certainly haven't. No.
I do have a friend who tried to make a homunculus, and I won't tell you what he put in this bottle, but that he kept sealed for like a month. But he told me that what happened was he unsealed it to see what the result had been, and he was unconscious for 3 days. His sister had to take him to the hospital because he was unconscious.
Wow.
And he woke up 3 days later.
Wow.
So kids, this is for you guys. Don't do alchemy.
Don't try this at home.
Don't try it at home. In Japanese, what they say, like on things like this, they say, good kids don't copy this. But that's, I think that's crazy, because like you're saying, okay, bad kids, go ahead, kill yourself. It's okay. It's like, just, you know, do all the bad stuff. It's all right.
Well,
just,
yeah, I mean, if you don't consider yourself a good kid, then you're kind of shrug. Yeah, okay, so good kids don't do it. Yeah, okay. I will. It's like the oh boy, that brings back the Knack song, Good Girls Don't, but I do. Completely different, Tim, context, but
I'm sorry, Tim, you're gonna have to sing it. I'm not familiar.
You know, the follow up to My Sharona.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Dating us. I don't know. Memory Echo, I'm not sure how old you are, but I'm not sure if you're familiar with late 70s rock music.
My Sharona, of course, I know. I didn't know the other one.
My Sharona, I know.
Yeah? Yeah? Okay. Yeah, Good Girls Don't was not as big of a hit, but it was on the radio for a while, at least the station I listened to. But okay.
This is lots of fun. Yeah. I'm really glad that we had you on. And
thank you. I really appreciate it being on, too.
Yeah.
Now you get to know firsthand how long it takes an episode to get from here to on the air. You're gonna learn.
Well, we've got a bit of a stash right now. We've got one episode before this one that's not out yet, so it's gonna be a little while. Now, the only thing is we still haven't come up with a replacement slogan because we've beaten our other slogans to death. So
just stick to the original.
That's right.
Okay.
And could you remind us what that just might be?
Yeah. What is the law of equivalent exchange, Memory Echo?
You get what you paid for.
That's right.
You got it.
Okay. Well, yeah, thanks for being on, and everybody, thanks for listening. See you next time.
Next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Our theme is Winter Fiend by Cryosyncope. You can follow us on Twitter at LOEEPodcast or email us at LOEEPodcast@deconstructingcomics.com. Support our show on Patreon at patreon.com/deconcomics. See you in 2 weeks. The Law of Equivalent Exchange is a production of deconstructingcomics.com.